Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend's edition, we are recording it a little bit before July 4th. I hope all of our listeners down in the U.S. had a great long weekend. Hopefully you even took an extra day on Friday and stretched this weekend out. We do appreciate you tuning in, spending some of your weekend on our podcast website and on the radio. This weekend show is going to be focused a lot on kind of the big picture markets, as hey, even though there was a loss of momentum in the last, let's say, month or so, at least on Wednesday as we're recording this, markets had another fire lit under them and we moved back to some all-time highs. We also got the metals moving again after about a month and a half of slow action. A lot for us to cover on the market side, but also on the overall economic side. We're kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Now, Mike, it's Wednesday as we are chatting. Earlier this morning, we had some weaker service data. Some jobs numbers were also on the weaker side. Now, we're also going to wait for Friday to see some more jobs data, but overall, the trend has been weaker U.S. economic data. That brings up the big picture then, Mike. Do we have a recession coming? Maybe not this year because of the election, but do you see that on the horizon?
Yeah, guys, glad I could join you and chat for a little bit here on these markets. Look, this is an environment where I think, and it's surprising for me to say it, especially someone who's been so skeptical of them in the past, but I think that this is a market where the Fed seems to maybe be getting it right with this whole soft landing talk and prediction and approach to policy. You're definitely seeing the markets, I mean, the inflation numbers, some of the jobless claims, when you look at some of the indicators on things like services sector, housing, and so on. I mean, you do have the market slow. You do have the economy slowing down. You have evidence of the economy slowing down, the labor market kind of easing up a little bit, and clearly some of it coming off the boil. But it certainly doesn't look like anything pre-recessionary to me. I don't see any issues. The kinds of stuff that I saw that was real problematic back in 2000, 2001, and again back in 2006, 2007, when there were a lot of things, kind of yellow warning signs to me that were saying, hey, this isn't a soft landing setting up. This is going to be a real problem. Whether it's a dot-com bust, whether it's a housing bust, and so on. Those kinds of things I don't see as being an issue today. And I think part of it, again, goes back to the thing we've talked about before, and that's that we kind of already had a bust for this cycle, right? I mean, we had 2 years ago, we had all this garbage stocks, IPOs, SPACs, whatever, that had a boom and bubble and then a huge bust. And you had the NASDAQ down substantially. You had Treasury selling off. You had everything not working. I mean, we had a pretty ugly market there for 2022. And so we've already kind of had this cycle's downturn, whatever, and now we're in a healthier advance. So I think that really, there's evidence the economy slowing, but it doesn't look to me like there's evidence the economy is tanking. There are not those warning signs and corners of the credit market that pointed to the kinds of problems that we had in 2007 through 2009. I'm not seeing those kind of early indicators behind the scenes of real issues. And I don't see the mania that we had at the dot-com bubble and that we frankly had a couple of years ago in IPOs and SPACs. So I've been sanguine about this market environment. I've been saying be bold as an investor since the start of 2023. And look how much money that's made you. As we headed into the holidays here, we had S&P 5,500. We had NASDAQ 18,000. Earlier this year, we had Dow 40,000 before pulling back. And now it's kind of gathering steam for the next leg up. So I think it's a time for probably less belly aching and more money making, right?
I like that, Mike. Less belly aching, more money making. And your call to be bold was a great call a couple of years back because it's been the right place to be. But if you just back up the clock 2 years and think about it, Mike, when we were having these discussions, a lot of people thought we'd have a recession in the tail end of 2023. And we did have those negative quarters of GDP growth for a while. So that was a concern. But ever since then, we were hearing that the Fed would start cutting rates 60 to 90 days after pausing. That didn't happen. We heard that the inverted yield curve would definitely mean we have a recession. That hasn't played out yet. We heard that we would have massive layoffs, and we have seen some layoffs in corporate America, but nothing to the degree that people were forecasting. How did the markets get things so wrong as far as the way they looked at it? And how do you stay on the right side of the train moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some things that got people worried, the inverted yield curve, which we had talked about, the issues happening in bank failures at the beginning of 2023, also some of the CRE, the commercial real estate exposure, and issues with property valuations and things that the office vacancies and other things that were a result of the COVID pandemic and the work from home environment we've been mired in, or partial work from home environment we've had since then. So I think a lot of those things were definite headwinds to those sectors and the investments tied to those sectors. So it's not like there aren't any problems out there, but in general, they haven't been enough to derail the broader economy. They haven't been enough to torpedo the entire credit market like we had back in the last cycle with housing and all these garbage mortgage securities. Instead, it's been bad for real estate. If you look at something like the main REIT sector ETFs like XLRE, it's been a lousy 2 years. It's the only sector ETF of the 11 that tracked sectors of the S&P that had a negative return in the first half of this year. So yeah, there are problems out there. There are things you didn't want to be invested in that you would have lost money if you had. I mean, again, to go back to those SPACs and IPOs and all that garbage stuff, I mean, you lost 50, 60, 70, 80% of your money at some of those things. But they weren't enough to sort of spread the rot throughout the system, systemic rot, like we saw back in 07, 08, and 09. And so with that being the case, it's been more when one sector group, whatever the problem pops up, people aren't taking their money out of the market entirely and burying it in their backyard or hiding it under the mattress. They're rotating into other sectors, investments, whatever, that have more promise and that don't have those problems. So that kind of rotational action is what I think has kept us from having a market that's completely fallen apart. And the fact that the underlying problems are simply not as severe in this cycle as they were in the last cycle.
Mike, one thing to address too, when we look at this economic data and simply just looking at GDP growth rate, go back to the tail end of 2020. Outside of those two quarters, the first quarter and the second quarter of 2022, GDP growth rate was over 2%, some quarters well over 2%. And then Q1 came in at 1.4% for this year. So a little bit of a slowing. But overall, when you look at those numbers, is it more of a natural economy that, quite frankly, the U.S., it's hard to expect GDP to grow by 3-4% every quarter. And as long as it's a positive number, it should be understood that, look, that is decent for the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, look, for a mature economy like ours, unless you're getting turbocharged money being thrown at the system, which is obviously what we had coming out of COVID, right? We had the double-barreled monetary and fiscal stimulus that was just this fire hose of money at the markets and at the economy. And that's why we had turbocharged growth, but then had the side effect of really bad inflation. But that, that all that extra money has kind of been draining out of the system. All that stimulus has been draining out of the system. We've moved past it. And so now we're settling into a more natural pace here. And that's also part of the reason I think you're seeing the joblessness tick up. You're seeing job growth kind of dial back, and you're seeing growth itself dial back. But again, I think that's actually one of the reasons why some of these sectors that are more secular and less cyclical, i.e., tech and things tied to tech investment, AI, whatever you want to call it, has been doing very well. It's because those are the parts of the market that you don't need a Biden stimulus. You don't need a stimmy check to go out. If you're a business that's looking to invest in technology, that's not what's driving it. You're trying to stay ahead of the game and stay ahead of your competitors and so on. And that's why you're investing. It's not because, like, a lot of people just sat in their basements and traded meme stocks because they got a $2,000 check. So I think in this environment, again, it's one that has seen rotation. I mean, if I had to put my finger on something that's a little negative, it's the lack of breath. But I think that we're probably going to see that breath pick up, especially as we roll now into the back half of the year. I think you're probably going to see people looking for other winners. They're going to say, hey, I made a lot of money in tech. I can't just own tech. Let's find something else. And you have seen, if you look at more recently, you have seen things like financials. You've seen things like energy pick up the slack. So you're seeing other groups start to participate. And I think that's kind of a prelude to what I would expect back after this year. Just a little more groups, more names, general participating than we've had for a while.
Well, Mike, let's talk on that string a little bit further, because to your point, everybody has been piled into the mega cap tech stocks, and that's done very well. It's lifted the indexes. When you look at the market breadth, not all sectors are participating, but there has been some new life in the financials and the energy sector. A lot of questions that we get is about the small cap stocks and interest rate sensitive sectors that we've been in this higher for longer environment on the interest rate side. How do you anticipate those patterns playing out? Interest rates and the stocks that are more sensitive to them, like the small caps in the Russell 2000?
Yeah, again, I think it's just going to be a case of here in the back half of the year, you're going to see the Fed probably cut in September. You're going to see the Fed probably cut in December. If there's going to be a surprise, it's that not that they're not going to cut, in my opinion, it's that they're going to sneak another cut in there. There is theoretically a chance they could cut at the end of this month if the data slowed enough, although I don't expect that. I think if there is going to be another cut, it'll come at the November meeting. I know everybody says, oh, it's the election time, we can't do that. I think that the economics are going to take precedence over that and so on. So yeah, I would just say, it's an environment where you're going to have the tailwind from monetary policy that had been a headwind for a few years. You're going to have probably a tailwind of broadening out where you see some of these other groups start to participate as rates get dialed back. You're probably going to have the tailwind of people saying, you know what? I've been too negative on this. It is a soft landing. I am not seeing this recession. I better buy, into the back half of this year so I don't get left behind. And frankly, I think you're going to see, in general, just a better sentiment and appreciation that we had the bubble. We had the bust in a lot of these parts of the market I've talked about. And when you come out of that, you can rally for a few years. I mean, that's what we did coming out of the dot-com bust. That's what we did coming out of the housing bust. It kind of fits the pattern. And that's what we've had really coming out of the October 22 low.
Let's talk about the credit markets then, because if the Fed is going to be cutting rates, well, lower rates, you would think, should free up some lending. It's been interesting in Canada hearing that once the Bank of Canada cut rates, people are then saying, well, I don't necessarily want to maybe redo my mortgage or anything because they're going to continue to cut rates. So what have you seen in the credit markets, and what do you see coming when the Fed starts cutting rates?
Yeah, I think you're going to see sectors like commercial real estate that have bigger issues, like pricing issues and declines have happened, some of these longer term challenges, back to work and whatever. I mean, you're going to see those types of parts of the market struggle but gradually turn. I mean, I've even noted that I think if you look at the Fed's own data, the SLOOS data, the Senior Loan Officer Survey that they do every quarter, you're actually seeing the degree of tightening ease back in CRE. In other words, we've probably seen peak tightness in the banking sector in terms of willingness to lend to CRE. We've probably seen the worst depths of in terms of demand for CRE lending. So, but that sector turns like a battleship. It doesn't turn like a PT boat. So it's going to take several quarters to kind of have the people that have been holding on to the overvalued buildings and banks and so on just throw in the towel and sell to opportunistic buyers with new capital that can come in and make a building work at a much lower price. So you're seeing that sector turn. I think you're not going to get housing residential demand to spike with 7% 30-year fixed mortgage rates in the US. But if they do ease back a percentage point or a percentage point and a half over the next 12 to 18 months, you'll probably see that sector turn up and at least stabilize. It's not going to be a new boom. You're probably going to see it loosen up enough with a decent backdrop in housing. And again, that's kind of what you'd expect, kind of par for the course in those sectors that turn slowly. And in general, if you see rates gently declining without tanking because we're heading into a recession, that's a bullish scenario.
Well, Mike, let's dive a little bit further into the broad markets. As the editor-in-chief at The Money Show, you get the advantage of hearing from a lot of different thought leaders in a lot of different sectors, everything from the general stocks to the tech boom to the crypto side of things and everything in between. And I'm just wondering if there's any themes that you've picked out for the second half of this year in 2024 that you're hearing about that seem like good investable themes for investors to follow along with.
Sure. Well, I think clearly notable editors of ours, contributors of ours that have been very bullish on the sort of big tech and AI trend are still sticking with this. I'd say number one, it's people aren't really abandoning what's worked. And when I say people, I mean those who have been right in early, those who got you into these kinds of names several quarters ago before they took off, your NVIDIAs and Teslas of the world and some of the smaller AI type plays. So they're still generally bullish. They still like what's going on there. They think it's a big kind of multi-year secular trend. So I'd say that's still out there. I would say that you've got more interest in precious metals beginning to percolate out there for obvious reasons. We've seen that market, that area of the market be dormant for a long time, but new highs attract interest, and that's what we saw earlier this year in gold and silver. I think we're probably going to continue to see that sector run later in the year. So, I mean, I know I've been focusing on it with my research, and some of the people I've talked to had some great interviews there and a special report I'm working on precious metals. So I think that's a pretty interesting area. And I'd also say people are still talking about energy, right? Which I find interesting because energy is, it's a growth play. Some of the energy names that are transport midstream type companies are a yield play in that sector. So you kind of attract some of the growth crowd, you attract some of the commodities crowd, and you attract some of the income crowd from some of the, you know, the companies that move oil products from place to place and spin off big dividends from doing it. So those are kind of, I think, themes in terms of what readers are and attendees are interested in, what speakers are talking about, and where I tend to line up my own interest. I think a lot of those sectors do look promising. So that's where I'm keeping my focus.
So, Mike, are you driving down with any of your precious metals reports or any metals reports in general to some of the stocks, how some of the majors are doing, or just the general interest for investors to try to get that leverage over those metals prices?
Yeah, some of the people I've talked to, the Brian Lundins, Omar Analysis of the world and so on, some of those guys do more work than I do when it really comes to pardon the pun, drilling down to the junior levels, the exploration levels and so on. I'm more of a 30,000 foot up guy. And so that's kind of the world I play in. But yeah, the report I've been working on does look at what some of these names are that they're talking about that are smaller plays. It does look at some of the sponsors that we have and also just some of the trends that are driving it. So that's going to be a big area of focus in the next couple of months. That's what we're going to have some of our speakers be talking about in Las Vegas and in Orlando later this year. I think it's for investors that are interested in kind of the next thing to move, the part of the market that is probably going to not just already have worked in the, like we've had with tech, but continue to work and maybe work even better. I think delving into that sector makes a lot of sense because it's funny when you look at the miners relative to the metals, and I've had a lot of the experts more than I do talk about it. You haven't seen that sort of speculative fervor. You haven't seen it trickle down to some of those really the smaller names, but they all tend to think that's coming as people get convinced that, hey, this isn't a flash in the pan. This isn't a false start. This is real, and you better get on board before it's too late. So, I can't argue with that.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch the metals price appreciation, but not see it reflected as much in the mining stocks yet, but it could be an opportunity. I want to pivot over to the energy comment you made because, Mike, there seems like there's kind of two camps. There is the traditional energy complex, when you think of oil and nat gas, that have plenty of opportunities. But then there's all these people writing about and discussing the energy transition theme. So whether it's switching more focus to copper or looking at how are we going to power all these data centers and crypto mining and EVs that plug into the grid, and are we going to need more nuclear? Are we going to need more solar farms? Or are we going to need more natural gas plants? So which area do you think is getting more interest, the traditional energy space or this energy transition theme?
Well, I think, to their credit, a lot of our speakers have pointed out that even a couple of years ago, when the energy transition and EVs and all this were only the only thing people want to talk about, we're kind of ignoring and saying big oil was a dinosaur and big gas is never going to be a thing. They've kind of stuck with their guns and said, look, if you get out of the hype, you get out of the sort of like politically driven thinking, and you just look at stuff from a rational supply demand economics type thing, that it's going to take years and years, really decades, to make this transition. It will happen over time. But by golly, getting from here to there, it's going to be a lot of money to be made in more traditional energy sectors. So I think I've seen the people who have stuck with their guns and sort of the big oil, big gas type play or sector, they've made listeners and attendees a lot of money, and I think they'll continue to do so. But there are people that are talking about, tangential plays, whether it's copper being used in terms of transmission lines and all that we need to do to ramp up the grid, whether it's silver and other things like that are used in alternative energy, processing, production, whatever you want to call it. And even some of these things, nuclear you mentioned is purely part of it, the uranium tie in there, as well as things like wind and solar. So I think in general, the backdrop for energy usage and for ways to make money in energy is pretty broad. But clearly, people who are just tied into the EV boom and trying to make money on that are falling behind. It's much more of a broader thing. And that also encompasses traditional energy. So a lot of opportunity there. And I was just reading a write-up for somebody, these two guys who are going to be doing a master class in Orlando. And I was reading their write-up, and that was essentially their thesis. I'm going to tell you about why this transition is going to take longer. I'm going to tell you about different ways to play it, whether it's utilities, whether it's oil and gas companies that are involved in that sector, the traditional part. And these are some of our best ideas. So I think you're going to continue to see that sector do pretty well as we head into the back half of 24 and beyond.
Mike, is there a longer term shift happening for investors, for the markets, where they start to pay a bit more interest to these hard assets, metals, commodities broadly, and away from financial assets? I ask that because I'm sure you've seen that chart of the disconnect between the two and how it's gone on for over a decade now. Are we seeing a longer term shift?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think even when it comes to, it's funny because even when it comes to technology and AI and this, that, and the other. I mean, you know, what's driving this technology? What's driving the computers that make it happen? What's driving the server farms, whatever? It's energy. How do you make energy? You make it from burning things that came out of the ground. Oil, gas, other sources of power, and so on. So it really, you know, people want to try and, like, I don't know. And I don't know if it's a political thing or if it's just sort of a conscientiousness thing. People want to not think too much about how some of this stuff happens, where the materials that go into the batteries that go into your EV come from, and so on. The reality is a lot of this technology is still underlying forces and materials that go into it. It's stuff you have to mine, produce, dig up, whatever, drill for. And so I think that commodities and the commodity sector are always going to be tied to some degree to some of this advanced tech and some of these other things that people want to talk about. So if you abandon one and completely in favor of the other, I don't think that's a good way to invest. And I don't think it's the way the world works.
Yeah, it is interesting to see at least more awareness about the need for the commodity cycle, something to fuel all of the stuff that runs the world. And there is a discussion that hard assets are also a safe haven. But over the last year, we've heard that really technology stocks are the safe haven and a good way to play inflation. But then we have the other camp, and I know that you cover this in the Money Show as well, Mike, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it, and that's the cryptocurrencies. They're seen as hard assets. So there's a lot of different sectors putting their arm up saying, we're the safe haven. No, we're the safe haven. So what is your take on the crypto side of things as a safe haven?
I mean, look, I've never been sort of somebody who's got their hands dirty in the crypto space and how it works and this, that, and the other. I'm not an investor in it. I'm not closely following it. I look at it, again, as kind of an asset class type thing. And I think I would say the cycle in crypto has been very similar to the cycle that we had previously when it came to things like dot-coms, when we had in housing and so on. We had the boom, we had the bust, and then what's left behind is a real business. The survivors can prosper. They can, you know, they can be part of this next generation of it. And I think that's what we've seen in crypto. So I think that there's a reason that we seem to have stabilized and real money is coming into this. In addition to the ETFs and so on, it's just that people are going to start gradually allocating to that and looking for sifting through the rubble and the bust to see what has real use cases and where this technology can take us in the future. So I'm not wildly bullish, but I do think it makes sense that people are starting to look at it. Mainstream money is coming in and getting more involved because it's not something that's just going to go away.
How do you judge if mainstream money is getting involved, whether it's in any sector? Is there certain data points, certain charts, certain anything else that shows you that, hey, there is mainstream money? There are kind of new investors coming into the sector.
I mean, you see it in the fund flows. You see it in just in the inquiries from investors that I talk to. You see it online on social media. It's just a bunch of sort of junk, fake coins and things like that being talked about. There's real businesses and people that are involved in real business ventures to try and find what the underlying technology can be used for. And you just see that transition happening. So that a lot of the grifters, a lot of the fraudsters, whatever, have been cleaned out. I mean, we all know what happened with the FTX of the world and so on. And you're left with something that really has a real business purpose to it. And that's how you ultimately make money in the long term.
Well, Mike, another, I guess we could call it a sector that we haven't discussed yet is the meme stocks. You mentioned it was part of the 2021 froth, but in a way, the meme stocks are back. Look, Roaring Kitty is back, and he attracted more viewers to his webcast than a lot of professional sports games did. And there was a big to-do in the news and the media about it. What do you think about the resurgence of the meme stocks and traders that are following an image of a guy sitting up in a chair or posting what he's doing in his account versus regular fundamental analysis on these stocks?
Look, there's always going to be some silliness in the market going on that you can point to and say, all right, this is a thing. It's almost like a sideshow, right? If you want to grab your popcorn and watch it and so on, hopefully you're not participating too much in it as a serious investor. My point would just be that there's a lot less money and interest in that kind of part of the world than there compared to what we had a couple of years ago. It's not dominating the headlines the same way that it did back then. And certainly your average investors are not as gambling every last penny on this kind of stuff. It's more of a sideshow than the main event, which is what we had a couple of years ago. So you can point to that kind of stuff. And I think it's right to point to some of the silliness involved. But does it worry me in terms of the broader market? No, because that's not the only thing working. That's just sort of a sideshow. The main event is real tech companies, real banks, real energy companies, and a broad advance in the market that's not driven by just the junk. It's being driven by the real companies.
All right, Mike. Great comments. I always really enjoy chatting with you. You provide such a balanced perspective on these markets, listening to the people that attend money shows, the speakers at money shows, the themes that you are hearing. And you did switch from a more defensive posture to a be bold posture. When these markets turned, you've been right on with them. And hey, you still are encouraged by this market action. Seems like a lot of other investors are still in the markets too, because look at the all-time highs we're hitting. Mike, thank you as always for your time. Everyone, you can learn more about the Money Show conferences coming up by clicking the link in the show notes. Mike, thanks for your time. I hope you have a great weekend.
Great. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.